Murka, in the heart of Yuuzhan Vong territory. Voxin Breeding Laboratory.
The scream and roar of combat began to reverberate through the empty Groschel, and wisps of battle smoke materialized in the green beams of their helmet lamps. Jason, now Darth Kytus, he reminded himself, continued to pull into the past, one glove clamped around the arm of Tahiri's pressure suit, the other anchored to the rim of a blaster-pitted gestation bin. The brown stains on the bin's exterior grew wet and red, and crouching forms started to manifest in the surrounding darkness. As he drew more heavily on the Force, the sallow light of the glow lichen began to shine down through the thickening smoke, revealing the cloning lab in which Jason's brother, Anakin, had died. Where there had been only barren vacuum a few moments before, now a pulsing jungle of white nutrient vines corkscrewed up the gestation bins that lined the Groschel floor. Streaks of color and darkness were flashing past in both directions, the air swirling with razor bugs and the floor shaking with grenade detonations.
I hope I'm ready for this,
Tahiri said. Over the suit comm, her voice sounded brittle and uncertain.
Maybe my first flow walk shouldn't have been into the middle of battle.
Jason knew it was not the battle that made Tahiri nervous, but he saw no advantage in forcing her to admit it.
We'll be fine, he said. We're ghosts here. Even if a Yuuzhan Vong sees us, he can't do us harm. It's us doing harm that worries me. What if we change something we shouldn't? Something that alters the present? That's unlikely.
Actually, Jason should have said impossible. Any change they made in the past would be corrected by the Force, and the flow would return to its present course.
I won't let you do anything wrong. Just relax. Unlikely isn't very relaxing. Not when you're talking about the fate of the galaxy. Trust me,
Jason said.
I've been flow walking for years, and the galaxy hasn't come to an end yet. Not that we know of.
Tahiri turned toward the back of the Groschel, where Anakin and the rest of the strike team were fighting through a breach in the wall. Their brown jumpsuits were blood-crusted and tattered, and their faces were haggard with fear and exhaustion, yet also tight with anger and resolve. This had been the objective of their mission, the cloning lab where the Yuuzhan Vong created the Voxin that had killed so many Jedi, and they would not leave until it was destroyed. The Force began to hum with Tahiri's anger and sadness, and her hand drifted toward her lightsaber. Jason could sense how she ached to do more than give Anakin the final kiss she had denied him at the time, how she longed to ignite her weapon and somehow prevent his approaching death. A trio of thermal grenades detonated overhead, filling the dome with orange brilliance and spraying hot shrapnel in all directions. Nutrient vines fell in ropes of fire, and Yuuzhan Vong dropped to the floor in writhing heaps. Tahiri cringed and turned to dive for cover, but Jason jerked her back. Shrapnel flew past without striking the pair, and flames licked at their pressure suits without melting anything.
I told you we can't be harmed here, Jason said. You also told me it was a coincidence we crossed paths on Anakin's anniversary day. That doesn't mean I believe you.
Jason frowned behind his visor. You think I arranged to bump into you?
Come on, Jason. I'm a smart girl.
Jason hesitated, wondering how much she knew about what he had done a week earlier, whether she had linked their trip here to his aunt's murder on Kavin. It was foolish to think he could kill the wife of Luke Skywalker and avoid discovery indefinitely, yet he had to. Jason had foreseen that the Confederation's boldness would soon put victory within the Alliance's grasp, but only if the Jedi did not interfere with his plans. After a moment, Jason said,
Okay, let's say I did arrange it. Why did you come?
Because I was tempted, and I want to find out what you need from me.
I don't need anything, Jason lied. I just thought this might help you move on.
You expect me to believe that?
It's for Anakin, too,
Jason said.
I think my brother deserves this much, don't you?
A guilty ripple rolled through the Force.
Not fair, and I still don't believe you.
Jason raised the shoulders of his pressure suit in an awkward shrug.
Does that mean you don't want to go through with this?
Tahiri sighed.
You know better than that. Then you have to trust my instructions,
Jason said.
You can't react to the past. The more you become a part of it, the more likely you are to be seen, and the more power it has to harm you.
Okay, I understand. It won't happen again.
Good.
Jason turned back to the battle, where the momentary silence that had followed the grenade explosions had been shattered by screaming blaster bolts and droning razor bugs. In the back of the Groschel, Anakin was just rising to his feet as the strike team took advantage of the enemy's disarray to overrun the cloning lab. When Jason saw his own figure dodging through the battle, he remembered how sad he had been for his wounded brother, how wrong it had seemed for the war to take such a noble young life. It was like watching himself in a home hollow, wondering how he could ever have been so naive. Perhaps once he united the galaxy, such idealism would no longer seem quite so foolish. The boom of a long blaster sounded outside the Groschel. Then a trio of Jedi came rushing inside. The young Tahiri, then just 15, was in the lead. Her blonde hair billowed behind her. The scars suffered during her imprisonment along the Yuuzhan Vong were still red on her forehead. She and the others had barely cleared the breach before a ball of yellow-orange fire followed them inside and exploded. The shockwave hurled the Jedi in three different directions, but they quickly used the Force to bring their trajectories under control and come down safely. Young Tahiri tucked herself into a front row and disappeared behind a gestation bin, then emerged from the other end, returning to her feet. Anakin was already rushing to her side, his free hand cupped over his abdomen, his jaw clenched against the pain of his wound. The voice of the older Tahiri came over the suit comm.
We need to move closer.
Fine, but stay in contact with me or the current will carry you off.
Still holding Tahiri's arm, Jason started toward his brother and the young Tahiri.
And whatever you do, don't open your pressure suit. Our presences are still anchored in our own time, so you'll decompress.
Thanks for the warning, but I kind of guessed.
Anakin and young Tahiri were now crouching together behind a gestation bin. As Jason led the way around behind the pair, young Tahiri suddenly raised her arm and pointed across the aisle, toward a scorched bin overflowing with Yuuzhan Vong corpses. Next to the bin, the strike team's meter-high healer, Tekli, stood over the scaly bulk of Tessar Sebatine. She was sprinkling stink salts on the Barabel's forked tongue, trying to rouse him from his unconsciousness and failing miserably. Jason continued to lead the way closer, moving very slowly and carefully. Flow walkers tended to cause blurs around themselves, both visually and in the Force, and the slower they moved, the less noticeable the effect would be. As they approached, Anakin pointed toward Tekli and the wounded Barabel.
Take him and go,
he said to young Tahiri.
You may need to cut a way out. You?
She responded.
I'm not going to do it,
Anakin snapped. Her face fell, and even the older Tahiri began to radiate surprise and dismay into the Force. Anakin's tone softened almost as soon as he had spoken.
You need to help Tekli. I'll be along.
Even through her pressure suit's auditory sensors, Anakin's voice sounded weak and anguished, and it was clear that he had known even then he was about to die. A growing tightness began to form in Jason's throat, and he was surprised at the effort of will required to make it go away. Jason had loved his brother, and apparently still did. But he could not let his emotions draw him into the past. As he had warned Tahiri, any reaction at all would make them easier to see. And if the other strike team survivors had suddenly started to recall a pair of blurry pressure-suited apparitions at the battle, someone might realize he had flow-walked here with Tahiri, and that would make her useless to him. By the time Jason had quelled his emotions, Anakin had stood again. He was gently pushing young Tahiri across the aisle toward Tekli, who was kneeling astride Tessar's scaly bulk and trying to slap him awake. The Force grew heavy with older Tahiri's sorrow, but Jason said nothing to her about the dangers of reacting to the past. He had known all along that she would not be able to control her emotions at this moment. He was counting on it, and he would just have to hope Tekli and the other survivors were too busy with the battle to notice any flow-walking apparitions.
Tessa is not responding,
Tekli said, looking across the aisle.
I cannot move him and work on him both.
Young Tahiri lowered her brow in doubt, clearly suspecting the Chadra Fawn of trying to draw her away from Anakin, but she could hardly refuse to help. Blinking back a tear, she stretched up to kiss Anakin, then caught herself and shook her head. This was the moment that the young Tahiri had pulled back, telling Anakin that if he wanted a kiss, he would have to come back for it. The Force seemed ready to break with the anguish of older Tahiri, who quickly stepped forward and pushed her younger self into Anakin's arms. Young Tahiri's mouth fell open, but before she could cry out, Anakin leaned down and silenced her with a kiss. The surprise drained instantly from her posture, and they remained together, body pressed to body, for what seemed an eternity, even to Jason, who often saw eternity in his visions. Knowing by the sullen weight of the Force, and by his own breaking heart, that they were being drawn ever more deeply into the past, Jason pulled the older Tahiri back to his side. If they were still there when the kiss ended, Tekle would certainly see them in 13 years or so, when Jason and Tahiri returned to their own time. The Chadra Fawn would begin to recall seeing them here in their pressure suits. When she reported her memory flashes to the Council, the Masters would realize that Jason had flow-walked Tahiri back to the battle and begin to ask themselves why, and his plan would be ruined. Jason began to back them away, slowly releasing his hold on the past. The scream and roar of battle started to quiet, and the sallow light of the Groshal's glow lichens began to dim. Before long, all he could see were two forms locked in an eternal embrace, their presences shining across time to illuminate the cold darkness. And then, even that light faded. A single heartbroken warble sounded over the suit comm, and Tahiri clasped the arm of Jason's pressure suit.
Did we have to leave? I wanted to see him after, to see if the kiss made his death any easier.
I'm sorry. I couldn't let us be seen.
Jason no longer felt like Jason inside. He was using his brother's death to manipulate Tahiri, to corrupt her, and it made him feel brutal and dirty. But what choice did he have? The Jedi were hunting Mara's killer with all their resources, and he needed a way to track their progress, to keep them under control, while he saved the Alliance.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Legacy of the Force, Inferno, by Troy Denning. Read for you by Mark Thompson.
Coruscant, Hapen Embassy, Royal Wing.
Tenel Ka sensed the hole in the Force the instant she entered the bedchamber. It was lurking in the back depths of the corner farthest from the entrance, a void so subtle she recognized it only by the surrounding stillness. She moved quickly through the doorway, her spine tingling with a ripple of danger sense so delicate it made her blood race. Before her lady-in-waiting could enter the room behind her, she looked back over her shoulder and called,
"That will be all, Lady Eros. Ask DD2 to lock down the nursery."
"Lock it down, Majesty?"
Eros stopped at the threshold, a slender silhouette still holding the evening gown Tenel Ka had just removed.
"Is there something I need to..."
"Just a precaution,"
Tenel Ka interrupted. Her robe was still hanging inside her refresher suite, so she was standing in her underclothes.
"I know our embassy should be secure, but this is Coruscant."
Eros withdrew into the anteroom. Tenel Ka used her elbow to depress a tap pad on the wall. Half a dozen wall sconces glimmered to life, revealing a chamber as ridiculously opulent as the rest of the embassy's royal wing. There were three separate seating areas, a life-sized holonet transceiver, and a huge mahogany wood desk stocked with stacks of flimsoplast bearing the Hapen royal crest. Despite the two sconces flanking it, the room's farthest corner, the one near her refresher suite, remained ominously dark. Tenel Ka could not sense any source of optical field keeping it that way, but then again, The only thing she could sense was, well, nothing. She ignited her lightsaber and took a few steps toward the corner.
"You would be wise to show yourself," Tenelka said. "I have no patience for voyeurs, as you should well know by now."
"I'm a slow learner." The darkness melted away, revealing a tall, shadow-eyed figure with a melancholy echo of his father's famous lopsided grin. He was dressed in black GAG utilities and smelled faintly of hyperdrive fuel, as though he had come to her straight from a space hangar. "And I don't usually get caught. My camouflage powers must be slipping."
"No, Jason. I'm just growing better at sensing your presence."
Tenelka deactivated her lightsaber and tossed it onto the bed, then smiled warmly and opened her arms to him.
"I was hoping you would find time to call."
Jason cocked his brow, then let his gaze slide down her body. "So I see."
"Well?"
Tenelka asked.
"Are you just going to stand there gawking, or are you going to do something about it?"
Jason chuckled, then stepped out of the corner and crossed to her. She slipped a hand behind his neck and drew his mouth to hers. Jason obliged, but his kiss was warm rather than hot, and she could tell that tonight his heart was not entirely hers. She stepped back, embarrassed to realize how insensitive she was being.
"Forgive me if I seem too joyful,"
she said, able to perceive now the sadness that tinged his hard eyes, the grief that tainted his clenched jaw.
"Tomorrow is Mara's funeral. Of course you have other things on your mind."
Jason's snort was so gentle that Tenelka almost did not hear it.
"It's okay," he took her hand. "I wasn't really thinking about Mara."
Tenelka eyed him doubtfully.
"Well, not exclusively," Jason admitted. "I'm happy to see you, too."
"Thank you, but I'm not offended,"
Tenelka said.
"Our thoughts should be on your aunt tonight. Have you found her killer yet?"
"We're still working on that." Jason's tone was defensive. "We don't have many leads, and I don't like the direction they're going."
"That is very cryptic,"
Tenelka observed.
"Can you..."
"Not yet," Jason said, shaking his head. "The truth is, I haven't been doing very much to find her killer. The Alliance has higher priorities at the moment."
"The war?"
Jason nodded. "I'm sure you're receiving the military's briefing, Hollows."
"Of course."
"In fact, the Hollows had been arriving twice a day for nearly a week now, along with urgent requests for Hapen reinforcements, which Tenelka could not provide."
"Don't tell me that Admiral Nyathol has prevailed on you to talk me out of my last fleet."
Instead of answering, Jason slipped over the couch arm onto a cushion, then sat staring into the flame tube that was the focal point of the seating area.
"I see,"
Tenelka said, astonished that Jason would agree to even attempt such a thing. He knew as well as she did that granting the Alliance request would place both their daughter and her throne in profound danger.
"There is nothing to send, Jason. As it is, the home fleet is barely enough to secure the consortium from my own nobles."
"You still need to hear this."
Jason continued to stare into the swirling tongues of blue inside the flame tube. "You're aware that Corellia and Bothawi are moving against Kuat, right?" Tenelka nodded.
"While the Huts and Commonor make preparations to attack Balmora."
She retrieved her dressing room gown from inside the refresher, then added,
"I do watch those Hollows they keep sending me."
"Sorry, just making sure," Jason said. "But what the briefings don't say, what they can't say, is that after the Battle of Balmora, the Confederation is going to mass its fleets at Kuat. Whoever wins there wins the war."
"Military planners always think the next big space battle will end the war."
Tenelka slipped the dressing gown over her shoulders and returned to the seating area.
"They're usually wrong."
"This doesn't come from the planners," Jason said. "I've seen it. In the Force."
"Oh."
Tenelka dropped into a chair adjacent to Jason's, stunned by the implications of what she had just heard. If Jason's Force vision was accurate, and she knew enough about his Force powers to think that it would be, the Confederation would soon have a massive force in position to threaten Coruscant herself.
"I see why you're worried,"
Worried might be an understatement, Jason replied. So would terrified. The Alliance just doesn't have the strength to stop them yet.
Yet?
Tenelka asked.
Are you telling me that Thrakken Sal Solo wasn't the only one building secret fleets?
Jason shook his head. Sorry, I'm talking about the Wookiees. Kashyyyk is certain to assign their assault fleet to our command, and that will tip the balance back in the Alliance's favor.
I doubt the Confederation is going to wait that long,
Tenelka said, almost bitterly.
Are you telling me the public reports are misdirection?
Not a bad idea, but no, Jason said. I'm telling you that our agents assure us it's a matter of when, not if.
In this instance, when is if?
Tenelka said.
Wookiees are very stubborn. By the time they finish their deliberations, the Confederation will be storming Coruscant.
I hope you're wrong. Jason tore his eyes from the flame tube, then met Tenelka's gaze. But I just don't know.
I see,
Tenelka said.
And you didn't come to ask for the home fleet?
Jason shook his head. Not really.
I was afraid of that.
Tenelka sank back in her chair.
So you only came to warn me that the Galactic Alliance is about to collapse?
Well, that's not the only reason. Jason grinned and cocked an eyebrow. Tenelka groaned.
This is no time for jokes, Jason. Your timing is worse than when we were teenagers.
Okay, then I could use some advice instead, Jason said.
Have any?
Tenelka's answer was immediate.
The Jedi could do something. Perhaps they could launch a stealth X-raid, or perhaps Master Skywalker could speak to—
I asked for advice, not wishful thinking. Jason's voice was suddenly sharp. The Jedi won't lift a finger to help us. They're practically traitors themselves.
Jason, that's not true,
Tenelka said.
The Jedi have supported the Galactic Alliance since its inception, and Master Skywalker is on the same side you are. If the Alliance is to be saved, you two must put aside your differences and work together.
A flash of fear flickered through Jason's eyes. And if we can't? He asked.
Can you stop the enemy's advance without the Jedi?
Jason shook his head. Not at the moment, and maybe not with them.
Then what choice is there?
Tenelka made the question a command.
The Jedi Council is unhappy about your coup, but the Masters will not stand idle while the Alliance falls, especially not if you grant concessions.
Jason fell silent a moment, then turned to face Tenelka. It's more complicated than that. Luke hasn't been himself since Mara died. He barely talks to anyone, and he's drawn in on himself so far he's practically cut off from the Force.
Surely you don't expect him to remain unaffected by his wife's death.
It's more than grief, Jason said. Tenelka frowned.
But Master Skywalker is not the only member of the Jedi Council. You can still ask for their help.
I can try, Jason countered. But I've already reached out to individual masters.
And?
They're all against me. Jason spoke matter-of-factly, merely reporting the truth as he saw it. They think I'm trying to take advantage of the situation. Until I have Luke's support, I can talk myself breathless. The Jedi are not going to cooperate.
I see.
Tenelka rose and stood staring into the flame tube.
What are you going to do?
We've given Admiral Boatu command of the 1st and 6th fleets, so maybe he can do something brilliant to stop the Corellians and Bothans before they reach Kuat. Jason tightened his lips, then said, But honestly, our best hope is still the Wookiees, and that's almost no hope at all. Tenelka nodded.
The briefing holo mentioned that they had rebuffed all attempts to hurry things.
They have. He looked away for a long time, then finally met her gaze again. If we can't stop the Confederation, what happens to you? Tenelka answered immediately, for it was a question to which she had been giving much thought lately.
I'll continue to hold my throne until the rebels consolidate their victory and turn their attention to Hapes. I'll put up a hard fight, at first, to see if I can force a peace negotiation. But I won't subject my people to an invasion I have no hope of stopping.
I know you'll do the best thing for Hapes, Jason said, sounding slightly amused. I was asking about you and Alana.
About us?
Tenelkar was surprised by the question, for the answer was as obvious as it was painful.
You must know the answer to that already.
The color drained from Jason's face.
What about hiding? I could ask the Falanasi to take you in.
Tenelkar smiled sadly.
That will work for a time, Jason. Perhaps even until the Confederation grows tired of looking for us. But they can't rule Hapes without Haben Blood on the throne. And whoever they install as their puppet won't tire. The Pretender will be too frightened of me or Alana trying to return, and she'll keep looking until we're dead.
Jason's shoulders slumped. Then he dropped back onto the couch and cradled his head.
Then we have no choice. What I mean, Tenelkar, is that you have to give me the home fleet.
Tenelkar felt her jaw drop.
Jason, I can't risk a rebellion.
You can and you must.
He rose and took her by the arm.
You said yourself that any pretender to your throne would never stop looking for you.
I don't matter,
Tenelkar said.
I won't put my subjects through another civil war.
I don't care about your subjects. I care about you and Alana.
Jason pulled her closer.
And I won't take chances with your lives.
The decision isn't yours to make. I must look after my subjects first, my family second.
Then look after your subjects, he insisted. The Confederation isn't interested in a unity government. What do you think they'll do with the galaxy if they win the war? The Confederation will do what barbarians always do, divide the spoils.
Tenelkar nodded.
You're right, of course.
I'm sorry, Tenelkar, Jason said, starting toward her. But if you don't give me the fleet, what do you think the Corellians are going to do to the Consortium? Or the Huts?
Tenelkar held her hand out behind her, signaling him to stay away.
I will give you the fleet, Jason.
Jason stopped two steps behind her.
Thank you, Tenelkar, he said, having the good grace to sound grateful.
You're saving the... Not yet, Jason.
Tenelkar interrupted.
There is one condition.
Very well, he said. I'm hardly in a position to bargain.
That's right, you aren't.
Tenelkar blinked her eyes dry, then drew herself up and turned to face Jason.
You must make peace with Master Skywalker.
A shadow fell over Jason's face.
There's no need to worry about the Jedi. They won't be interfering anymore. You can be sure of that.
I'm not worried about interference,
Tenelkar said.
You need their cooperation.
Jason took a step back, as though he had been pushed.
I'm not sure I can make that happen. It takes two to make peace, and Luke...
Peace, Jason. That is my condition.
Tenelkar took him by the arm and started toward the door.
And may I suggest you start by addressing your uncle as Master Skywalker.
Jedi Temple, Morning Court.
5 stories below lay the Morning Court of the new Jedi Temple, a large circular atrium carpeted in living sturdy moss and surrounded by curving walls of mirrored transparasteel. This morning, the roof membrane was retracted, and the enclosure was packed with Alliance dignitaries dressed in somber shades of gray and black. On the far side of the crowd, several rows of Jedi knights in white robes kneeled before a large pyre. Atop the pyre lay a lithe female body wrapped in white gauze, hands folded across her chest, red hair cascading over the logs beneath her. The distance was too great to observe the dead woman's face, but Leia knew that no matter how well the mortician had plied his art, there would be lingering hints of outrage and anxiety, of hostility and fear. Mara Jade Skywalker would have died angry, and she would have died worrying about Ben and Luke. Han stopped beside Leia and peered through the transparasteel wall.
I don't like it. How come she didn't return to the Force?
That doesn't always happen, Leia explained. Trissini Lobi didn't return to the Force.
Because her body was evidence. She wanted Luke to see her wounds, so he'd know Lumaya was after Ben.
I'm not sure it works that way.
As Leia spoke,
Saba Sebatine and a group of brown-robed Jedi Masters emerge from a door on the far side of the Morning Court.
But it might, Han insisted. Maybe Mara's trying to tell us.
Han, Leia interrupted. I'm sure the Masters have already considered that possibility, and it looks like we're running late.
She pointed across the courtyard to Saba and the other Masters, who were escorting Luke and Ben toward the head of the funeral pyre. Leia reached out in the Force to let Luke know they had arrived, but his presence was so drawn in on itself that it was almost undetectable, and it shrank even more when she tried to touch him.
She allowed Han to guide her down the corridor, both irked and saddened to be reminded of the detention warrant their own son had issued against them. Jason had turned so terribly dark that she often found herself wondering why she had failed to see it coming, why she still couldn't name the thing that had changed him. They rounded a bend in the corridor and came to a turbolift station. Han touched a pad requesting descent to the courtyard level. Nothing happened. Han struck the pad again, this time with a bent knuckle, and the status light still refused to turn green. He sighed in exasperation.
Great. He started down the corridor to look for another lift. You're giving the eulogy, and we can't even get a...
Wait. Leia grabbed his arm and pulled him back. Her spine was tingling with danger sense.
I think we're being watched.
Of course we're being watched.
Han hitched a thumb at the Morning Court, more or less aiming at the dignitaries on the near side of the enclosure.
Have you seen who's out there? Every apprentice in the temple must be monitoring security hollows.
Which is why I'm surprised you and Princess Leia decided to come, Captain Solo.
The voice was crisp and deep, and behind them.
But I should have known by now not to doubt the Colonel. He said you would come.
Leia turned to find a shaved-head lieutenant leading a small squad of black-uniformed soldiers around the bend. It took a moment to recognize who they were, for she couldn't believe even Jason would set a trap for his own parents at his aunt's funeral. Yet here Leia was, looking at half a dozen GAG troopers who clearly thought they were going to arrest her and Han. Han scowled.
How'd you get in here? This is Jedi territory.
And the Jedi serve the Alliance.
The lieutenant stopped 5 meters away, his troopers spreading across the corridor behind him, and glowered in Leia's direction.
At least they're supposed to.
You're making a big mistake, Lieutenant, Leia said, putting some ice into her voice. The Jedi Council won't view this intrusion lightly. You might save your career by leaving now.
The Jedi Council will do what the Colonel tells them to, just as I do.
The lieutenant snapped a finger, and the troopers leveled a line of T-21 repeating blasters at the Solos.
Now come along quietly. We don't want to disturb Master Skywalker's funeral any more than you do. It would be disrespectful.
Yes, it would.
Leia put the strength of the Force behind her words, at the same time waving 2 fingers to keep the captain from focusing on the suggestive timbre of her voice.
That's why my son gave us safe passage.
The lieutenant furrowed his brow, then said,
There must be a mistake.
He motioned his squad to lower their weapons.
The Colonel gave them safe passage.
The troopers continued to aim at the Solos, and the corporal beside him snapped,
Sir, she's doing that Jedi thing to you.
The lieutenant's gaze flickered away for a second, then returned clear and focused.
Try that again, and we open fire. I'm not weak-minded, you know.
No?
Han asked.
Then how come you're taking orders from my son?
The lieutenant's face reddened.
Colonel Solo is a great patriot. Perhaps even the savior of the...
His voice broke into a scream of alarm as Leia force-hurled him into the troopers behind him, knocking half the squad off its feet and sending the rest stumbling for balance. She snatched her lightsaber off her belt and started down the corridor in the opposite direction. Han was already 3 steps ahead, tugging his blaster pistol from his holster with one hand and reaching back for her with the other. Leia took Han's hand and sprinted down the corridor to the next intersection. When she turned away from the Morning Court, Han looked over and stopped running.
Wrong way!
He tugged her in the opposite direction, back toward the funeral.
You're never gonna make it in time.
I know, Han.
Leia remained where she was, using the Force to anchor herself to the floor.
but our presence has already caused too much of a disturbance. We can't turn Mara's funeral into a blaster battle.
We're not the ones to blame, Han objected. Jason sent the goons.
And what does that change? Leia asked. If we go out there, they'll still follow and try to arrest us. And then where will we be?
Han's face fell as he contemplated the alternatives. Surrender nicely and be hauled off to a GAG prison, or start a firefight in the middle of Mara's funeral. Either way, they would not be doing Luke or Ben any good. He stopped pulling.
Nowhere, he said. Looks like Jason wins again.
For today, Leia said.
She started down the corridor in her original direction, pulling Han after her toward the temple exit.
But you're right, Han. It's time for us to do something about that kid.
Saba Sebatine had been living among humans for well over a standard decade, and still there was so much she did not know about them. She didn't understand why Master Skywalker seemed so lost right now, why he had stopped talking to his friends and turned all his attention inward. Surely he knew Mara wouldn't want that, that she would expect him to stay focused and guide the Jedi through this time of crisis. But he just stood staring at the funeral pyre, as though he couldn't quite believe it was his mate up there, as though he expected her to awaken at any moment and climb down to stand beside him.
Perhaps he was only trying to understand why Mara had failed to return her body to the Force, wondering, like so many other masters, whether it still held some clue to the killer's identity that had been missed during the autopsy. Or he could be worried that something in Mara's past had interfered, that she had done something as the Emperor's hand so terrible that the Force could not take her back. Saba only knew that she did not know. That Master Skywalker had been wounded in some way she could never understand and had lost himself. And she feared that if he did not return to himself soon, something terrible would happen. She could feel that much in the Force. Saba felt the weight of someone's attention and turned to find Corran Horn's green eyes fixed on her back. He was standing about 3 meters away, discussing something with Kip and Kenth Hamner, while Silgal, Kyle Katarn, and the rest of the Masters remained with Master Skywalker and Ben. When he noticed Saba looking, he gave a little head jerk, summoning her over. Saba nodded, but glanced back to make certain the dignitaries filing the courtyard weren't growing too impatient with the delay. Tenel Ka was in the front row, kneeling in meditation alongside Tesser, Lobaka, Tahiri, and most of the other Jedi Knights, except Jaina and Zek, who had been ordered to continue their pursuit of Alima Rar. In chairs behind the Jedi Knights, Admiral Nyathol and her entire high command sat bolt upright, too disciplined to fidget no matter how late the ceremony was running. Behind them sat most of the Senate and the secretaries of every major department, putting their time to good use by chatting with one another in solemn whispers. The only person of note whom Saba did not see was the man who should have been in the vacant chair to Admiral Nyathol's right, the co-leader of the coup government, Jason Solo. Satisfied that the distinguished audience members were not on the verge of departing, Saba excused herself to Ben and a barely cognizant Master Skywalker, then joined Corran and the others.
What? Saba demanded. Can you not see how all this waiting is affecting Master Skywalker? When are we going to start?
Corran and Kip shot each other a nervous glance. Then Kenth said,
We'll start as soon as you are ready, Master Sebatine.
Saba flicked her tongue between her lips, trying to figure out why they would be waiting for her.
This one?
That's right, Corran said.
He cast a glance over her shoulder toward Ben and Master Skywalker, then lowered his voice to a barely audible whisper.
You felt that disturbance on the upper access level a few moments ago?
Yes,
Saba replied.
What was it? A new screw trying to sneak hollows of the funeral?
Not exactly, Kip said, also speaking softly.
It was a GAG squad. Saba's jaw fell.
A GAG squad inside the temple?
I'm afraid so, Kenth replied. They tried to arrest the Solos.
Saba thumped her tail against the slat stones, pondering, then finally shook her head in bewilderment.
Only a squad? That is not enough.
Not even close, Kip agreed. But we'll talk about that later. The pursuit has already moved outside the temple, and we have other things to worry about right now. Saba nodded.
Of course, this one will inform Master Skywalker.
As she started to turn away, Korn reached for her arm, then seemed to remember what could happen when one grabbed a Barabel and quickly drew his hand back.
Do you think it's wise to involve Master Skywalker? Korn asked. He has enough on his mind right now.
This one thinks he does not have enough on his mind,
Saba replied.
Mara would not want him turned inward like this.
No, but she would understand, Kent said.
Humans need to grieve, Saba. We need to let him have this funeral.
It's the only way he'll get better, Korn added.
Saba riffled her scales.
We cannot let the intrusion go unpunished. Jason is already swinging us like a tail.
We won't, Kip assured her. We'll do something right after the funeral.
Saba nodded.
Good. But somehow this one does not think you told her about the intrusion, just to ask her not to tell Master Skywalker.
Korin shook his head.
Not really, he said. You see, Princess Leia was supposed to give the eulogy.
Ah, now this one understands why Jason didn't come.
Jason didn't know, Kent said. But that's not really the problem.
Of course not.
Saba glanced at the crowd of dignitaries, then back to Master Skywalker and Ben.
Now how are we to give Master Skywalker his grieving?
Korn and Kent exchanged glances. Then Kent said,
We were hoping you would speak.
This one? You are serious?
Kent nodded.
You were Mara's friend, he said. If anyone understands what she meant to Luke and the rest of us, it's you.
But this one is not even human,
Saba said.
She doesn't understand grieving.
That's okay, Kip said. We'll understand if you're afraid. I can always fill in instead.
This one is not afraid.
Saba knew he was manipulating her, but she also knew he was right. Refusing would not be worthy of Mara's memory.
She just doesn't know what to say.
Just speak from your heart. Kent gave her a gentle force nudge toward the speaker's lectern. You'll do fine.
Saba swallowed hard, then returned to Master Skywalker's side and spoke into his ear.
Leia and Han were delayed,
she said.
This one will start.
Luke's gaze rose to the top of the pyre and locked on Mara's face, and he said nothing. The shadows beneath his hood were almost deep enough to hide the red bags beneath his eyes. But even drawn in on himself, his force aura beamed anguish. Ben leaned out from behind Luke and nodded.
That's good. Mom would like that.
A stream of warmth flooded Saba's heart, and her anxiety about speaking in front of so many dignitaries vanished. She turned toward the audience and straightened her robes, then stepped up to the lectern. A silver hover mic rose to float before her throat, but she deactivated it with a flick of her talon and returned it to its charging socket. When she spoke about Mara, she would not need a voice projector to make herself heard. The courtyard quickly fell silent. Saba took a moment to make eye contact with Tenel Ka, Admiral Nyathol, and many of the other dignitaries in the audience. Then, using the Force to carry her voice to the farthest edges of the courtyard, she began.
We have come to this sacred place to say farewell to our dear friend, to a fierce warrior and a noble dispenser of justice. Mara Jade Skywalker was one of the brightest stars of the Jedi Order, and we will miss her.
Saba shifted her gaze to the Jedi Knights, kneeling in the front row of the audience.
Her light has been taken from the galaxy, but it has not been extinguished. It lives on in us, in the times we shared the hunt, in the lessons she taught us as a master.
She turned and spoke directly to Master Skywalker and Ben.
It lives in the love and counsel she gave as a mate, in the sacrifices she made as a mother. As long as our hearts beat, her light lives inside us.
Master Skywalker finally tore his gaze from the pyre. Though his expression was not exactly peaceful, there was at least a hint of gratitude in his eyes, and she could tell that her words were reaching him. It was harder to tell whether she was being any comfort to Ben. His attention was fixed on the slat stones beneath his feet, his brow furrowed in concentration, his force aura swirling with pain and confusion, and a rage that Mara would have found very frightening. As Saba contemplated what she might say to quell that rage, a low murmur arose from the audience, starting from the back of the courtyard and rippling slowly forward, growing louder and more animated as it drew closer. Saba turned back to the listeners, wondering if her words could be generating that much excitement, and found the entire audience craning their necks to look back toward the entrance. Striding up the central aisle was a black-clad figure in knee-high boots, with a long shimmer silk cloak rippling from his broad shoulders. His face was somber, and his eyes sunken in shadow, his bearing brusque. Once it grew reasonably apparent that every eye in the audience was on him, he raised a black-gloved hand in a gesture that was half apology and half greeting. "Excuse my tardiness," Jason Solo said. "I was detained by urgent matters of state. I'm sure everyone understands." When Jason reached the front of the crowd, he ignored the seat that had been reserved for him beside Admiral Nyathol. He continued instead to where the Jedi Knights were kneeling, then bowed to Tenel Ka. "Thank you for coming, Queen Mother," he said. "In these times, I know your journey couldn't have been an easy one."
"Master Skywalker was an extraordinary Jedi and an uncommon friend."
Tenel Ka's gray eyes betrayed nothing as she spoke.
"We would have endured worse to be here."
"I'm sure your presence is a great comfort to Ben and..." Jason paused, then finished. "Master Skywalker." Tenel Ka dipped her head in an almost imperceptible nod.
"We can only hope so."
Jason excused himself with a polite click of his boot heels, then stunned Saba and the rest of the Jedi by continuing forward to stand at Luke's side. The Force boiled with the outrage of the Masters, but Jason pretended not to notice. Mara's funeral was the perfect opportunity to raise the public's perception of his standing among the Jedi, to plant the idea in the minds of hundreds of dignitaries that he was his uncle's equal, and he could not afford to pass that by. When Luke remained oblivious to Jason's presence, Kenth Hamner stepped forward and spoke in a voice of fatherly reproach.
"Jason, you know you're not a master."
Kenth gestured toward the Jedi Knights kneeling in the front row.
"Your place is with the other Jedi Knights, should you care to assume it, Jedi Solo."
"I think that's where we misunderstand each other, Master Hamner." Jason pulled his dark cloak aside, revealing the empty lightsaber snap on his utility belt. "I'm not here as a Jedi."
"You're still standing in the wrong place," Kyle Katarn said, joining them. "This is a Jedi funeral."
"A funeral I'm attending as family." Jason spoke in a deliberately reasonable voice, trying to create the impression that it was the Masters who were causing the disturbance. "I'm only here to comfort my cousin and uncle."
"To comfort them?"
Kip Duren came forward.
"You expect us to believe that?"
"It is the truth," Jason said gently. Kip ignored the objection and took Jason by the arm. Then Luke surprised them both by raising a hand.
"Wait."
Beneath the grief, there was an odd note of urgency to Luke's voice. "Jason is welcome to stand with Ben and me." Kip's jaw dropped.
"But Master Skywalker, Jason is just using the funeral to..."
"It's fine."
Luke gestured for Kip and Kenth and Kyle to resume their places.
"I want Jason here."
Kip scowled, but joined Kenth and Kyle in obeying. Jason watched them retreat, feeling as confused as they looked, until Luke turned and extended his hand.
Thank you for coming, Jason.
Mara was a great Jedi and a loving aunt. As Jason clasped arms, he took extra care to hide his feelings from the Force. It was hard to imagine his uncle having the strength to probe for guilty emotions right now, but the galaxy was littered with the body parts of those who had underestimated the strength of Luke Skywalker. I would never have missed the chance to show my respect for her. I'm glad. It's time we healed this rift between us. Luke returned his gaze to Mara's body. I think that must be what she's trying to tell us.
Tell us? Jason echoed.
He looked to the top of the pyre and decided Luke must be losing touch with reality. Mara lay as dead as before, neither her lips nor anything else moving. There was no sound coming from anywhere near the vicinity of the body. Then he noticed that Mara's white swaddled form was starting to grow translucent and glow with Force energy. Saba sissed in astonishment, and several other masters sighed in relief. But Jason nearly choked on his shock. If Mara was trying to tell anyone anything, it had nothing to do with reconciliation and everything to do with exposing her killer. Luke clasped Jason's shoulder.
She waited until we were together, he said. I think there's a message in that, don't you?
Yes, of course. To Jason's amazement, there was no hint of deception or cynicism in his uncle's voice or presence. Luke had clearly drawn the wrong conclusion about what Mara was trying to tell him, perhaps because she had died while keeping her activities secret from him, and Jason was more than ready to embrace his good fortune.
I think that must be exactly what Mara is telling us. We can't save the Alliance without working together.
Good point, Luke said. I'll try to remember that this time.
And so will I.
Jason sneaked a glance in Tenelka's direction and was rewarded with a tiny nod, barely perceptible, but distinctly approving.
I promise.
Luke dipped his head in agreement, or perhaps even gratitude, and Jason found himself struggling to keep his relief, his exhilaration, from spilling into the Force.
He was going to have his fleet, and with it would come the strength to lure the Confederation into a trap and smash it, to unite the galaxy in justice and peace.
As Jason fought to control his emotions, Luke turned toward the lectern where Saba Sebatine stood watching them, studying Jason but looking somewhere beyond him, or perhaps it was deeper into him, as though she were seeing not Jason's public face, but his inner one, that of Darth Kytus.
Saba, Luke called softly.
Saba's gaze swung back to Luke.
Yes.
Luke gestured at the audience.
Maybe you should continue.
He glanced at Mara's luminous body, which had already grown so transparent that the back wall of the courtyard could be seen through it.
I'd like to finish before Mara is completely gone.
Yes, please forgive this one, she said. She was distracted.
Saba turned toward the courtyard again.
Surely this one speaks for everyone here when she says how glad she is Colonel Solo could spare a few minutes to honor his noble aunt.
The opening was enough of a shock to tear most eyes in the audience from Mara's rapidly vanishing form.
And it is good that Colonel Solo arrives at this point in our remembrances. Because the greatest gift Mara Jade Skywalker left us is the lesson of her life. A life that began under the darkest of shadows.
She half turned to face Jason, Luke, and Ben.
As a young child, Mara was taken from her parents and shaped into pure spy and assassin. And her keeper set her to doing terrible things when she was barely old enough for the hunt. She did them because she believed they were right. Because she believed in the dream of a single galaxy with one justice. A galaxy bound in peace by a single fist. That fist belonged to Emperor Palpatine, and his dream was one filled with darkness.
Now Saba locked gazes with Jason, her face scales ruffling in rebuke.
It meant the deaths of billions and the enslavement of trillions, the end of freedom and the silencing of dissent. It brought fear to those it claimed to protect and misery to those it pretended to serve. As Mara's missions carried her father afield, she began to see the evil in her master's dream. For a time, she tried to carry on, telling herself that evil was necessary to bring peace, that some must suffer before all could live in harmony.
When Jason still had not looked away, Saba finally broke gazes and turned back to the audience.
We all know how that ended. After the Emperor died, there were those who would not relinquish his dark dream, who attempted to keep the Empire alive and even restore Palpatine's clones to power. Mara was not one of them. After the Emperor's death, she wandered the galaxy for many years, searching for a new life. And she began to see more clearly what she had been, the evil she had done. Then fate placed her life in the hands of a man she had once considered an enemy, a man whom she still felt compelled to kill. And during their difficult journey together, she began to understand that there was another way, a way filled with freedom and love and trust. Mara once told this one that all it took to lift the Emperor's veil from her eyes was a long walk in the forest with this man.
Saba extended her arm toward Luke.
That after she had come to know Luke Skywalker, it was easy to step into the light.
Tears welled in the eyes of both Luke and Ben. Ben at least had the pride to turn away and wipe his face, but Luke merely let his tears flow, his gaze never straying from the top of the pyre as Mara's body paled from a radiant ghost to a shimmering blur of light. When it had finally vanished altogether, Luke closed his eyes and let out a soft breath, then laid an arm over Ben's shoulder.
"She's with the Force now, son," he whispered. "She'll be with us. Always."
"Yeah, Dad."
Ben's voice did not even come close to cracking, and Jason was proud of him for that.
"I know."
Jason reached over to give Luke's shoulder a comforting squeeze, then felt the weight of Saba's gaze and looked up to find her glaring at him, her eyes filled with anger and sorrow and warning.
"And that is the lesson of Mara's life,"
the Barabel said.
"If we wish to live in goodness, all we need to do is open our hearts. If we wish to bring justice and peace to the galaxy, all we need to do is step into the light."
Jason lowered his hand and returned Saba's glare with a tight smile. Saba slipped out from behind the podium and, making a point of ignoring Jason, bowed to Luke and Ben, then stepped to the foot of the empty pyre. Instead of setting the wood ablaze, as she would have done had there still been a body, she simply faced the other masters, and together they began the traditional recitation of the Jedi Code. "There is no emotion, there is peace. There is no ignorance, there is knowledge. There is no passion, there is serenity. There is no death, there is the Force." As soon as they had finished the recitation, Jason left Luke's side and went straight for Saba. "A touching eulogy, Master Sabatine." He kept his voice angry, but not quite menacing. "Very instructive. I'll remember it for a very long time."
"Good,"
Saba replied evenly.
"This one only hopes you come to understand it as well."
A series of gasps and titters betrayed the eavesdroppers in the front rows of the audience, and Jason realized he was in danger of looking weak. He dropped all pretense of civility and glared at Saba in open hostility. "Your humor has always been a mystery to me, Master Sebatine," he said. "It's a wonder I haven't taken offense before this. And I hope you'll forgive us now." Luke stepped to Jason's side and scowled at Saba, then said, "None of us are quite ourselves today. Please don't let that stop you from joining Ben and me after the ceremony. I meant what I said about healing the rift between us." "That would be best for everyone," Jason said. "We must think of the future. But I'm afraid I can't join you today, Master Skywalker," he said. "I'm due topside earliest." Luke's brow fell in confusion. "Maneuvers?" "No, I'm accompanying the Fourth Fleet into action." Jason cast an accusatory glance toward Kenth, Kyle, and the other masters. "I'm surprised the Council didn't tell you. I requested the Jedi stealth exes." Luke frowned at Saba, who could only nod and say,
"We didn't think you should be disturbed."
The irritation in Luke's eyes changed to comprehension. His face clouded with something that might have been shame. Then he frowned at Saba and the other masters. "You can fill me in later." It was Kenth Hamner who answered.
"We'll be happy to."
He glanced in Jason's direction and added,
"There are a lot of things you need to know."
Luke narrowed his eyes, but turned to Jason.
"I understand duty calls, but I hope you'll think about what happened here today."
"I will be thinking about it," Jason said.
"You can be sure of that."
"Good.
May the Force be with you."
"And with you." Jason turned and strode down the aisle, driving his boot heels into the sturdymoss and using the Force to gently move people aside. Kenth Hamner stepped to the lectern and thanked everyone for helping the Jedi celebrate the life of Mara Jade Skywalker. He reminded them to keep her example in mind during the difficult days to come, and invited them to the Remembrance Feast being laid out in the Hall of Peace. As the crowd rose to leave, Luke turned toward the courtyard's rear exit, motioning for Ben, Saba, and the rest of the masters to follow. Once the group was inside the fern-filled lobby that had served as the funeral staging area, Luke turned to Saba.
"Was that really necessary?" he demanded. "We're not going to bring Jason back into the fold by antagonizing him in public."
"We are not going to bring Jason back at all," Saba said. "Jason is beyond saving."
"That's not your call," Luke said. "Mara held on to her body for a reason. She was trying to tell us that if we want to save the Alliance, we have to work with him, not against him."
"I don't think so," Kip said, shaking his head. "Saba's right. Jason was just using Mara's funeral to make himself look more important to the Order."
"Don't you think I know that?" Luke said. "It still gives us an opening. And it will be better for the Alliance, for the Jedi, and for the galaxy if we guide Jason rather than fight him."
"No, Dad, it won't," Ben said. "In fact, I don't think Mom meant the message for you at all. If there even was a message."
"Of course there was a message," Luke said, growing confused. "Why else would your mother wait until Jason arrived to return her body to the Force?"
Ben shrugged and avoided Luke's eyes.
"I don't know. But I don't think she was telling us to trust Jason."
Luke scowled.
"Ben, what aren't you telling me?"
Ben shook his head.
"Nothing."
If Ben was lying, Luke couldn't feel it in the Force. He considered trying to wait the boy out, but anyone who had witnessed as many GAG interrogations as Ben had would hardly fall for such rudimentary tactics. Instead, he gave up and turned to Corrin Horn.
"Is anyone going to tell me what's going on?"
Corrin glanced at Kip, who turned to Kyle, who pursed his lips and looked away, apparently as he debated whether Luke was strong enough to hear the truth. Luke turned to Kenth.
"You said you had a lot to tell me," he reminded. "Start telling."
"We didn't want to upset you during the funeral," Kenth replied. "But a unit of GAG troopers tried to arrest Han and Leia. That's why they didn't make the funeral."
"They let the GAG catch sight of them?"
Luke was incredulous.
"The Solos?"
It happened inside the temple, Kent explained, less than an hour ago. This time Luke was stunned. A GAG squad? In here?
On level 6, Kip said. The Solos were coming in from the Ministry of Justice, Mezzanine.
Why didn't anyone tell me about this?
When no one answered his question, Luke said, Forget I asked. Where are they now? All eyes turned to Corrin, who was monitoring the temple security channels over an earcom.
We don't know, he said. They escaped into Fellowship Plaza, and Leia's been force-flashing the security cams.
Not the Solos, Luke said. I mean the GAG squad.
Temple security spotted them, Corrin said. They're outside, escorting Jason across Fellowship Plaza.
A sudden silence fell over the gathering. It was Ben who broke the silence.
So what are we going to do about it? We can't let him get away with trying to arrest us.
Luke thought for a moment, then said, Actually, I think we will.
What?
The question came from three masters at once, and Saba added in all sincerity,
This is a poor time for jokes, Master Skywalker. We have serious troubles.
Luke nodded.
That's true. And so is what I said to Jason about working together. Somebody's got to take the first step.
Right into a trap,
Ben muttered.
Maybe. But Jason isn't the only one who knows how to set a trap, Luke said. And it might be nice to surprise him for a change.
Ossus, a Dagger system. Jedi Temple of Ossus.
Even from an altitude of 1,000 meters, the Jedi Academy on Ossus looked enormous. Spread across a verdant benchland between a lush mountainside and a gloom-filled rift valley, its tidy sweeps of green turf were surrounded by burgeoning plots of foliage and connected by snaking ribbons of gray paving stone. To Jaina's surprise, there were no tiny dots dodging among the glistening spires and elegant halls. If not for the force presences she could detect inside the buildings, she would have thought the place deserted. Perhaps the Solasars had called a week of meditation out of respect for Mara's funeral. They would have regretted not being there as much as Jaina did, and the children would need ritual to help them deal with the loss of such an important Jedi Master. Jaina only wished that she and Zek and Jag could have afforded the time to join the meditation. She was hurting in a way she had not hurt since the war with the Yuuzhan Vong, when she had lost Anakin and Chewbacca and 100 other dear comrades. It was taking all her strength just to let the grief come and not retreat into herself as she had during the war. Jagged Fell's crisp voice sounded over the intercom of the Star Drive Dactyl that the Alima hunting team was flying this week.
Sense anything?
Negative,
Zek answered from several meters behind Jaina. He was seated on the opposite side of the fuselage, staring through an observation blister similar to Jaina's.
Maybe we shouldn't put so much faith in vector readings. We don't know anything about that new ship she's in. And why would she come here?
Because she's Alima Rar, Jaina responded. And if we waste time trying to figure out why she does anything, we're crazier than she is.
The entrance to the Academy hangar suddenly passed by beneath the Dactyl. Then Jaina's observation blister filled with sky as Jag rolled the ship on its side and began to swing around for another pass. The Dactyl was a lot less maneuverable than the YT-2400 they had been using as a mothership until a few days ago, but Jag insisted on changing vessels frequently, believing it would make it more difficult for Alima to spot them coming. At least this one had a private berth for everyone and room for stealth X's. Once Jag had brought the vessel around, he swung away from the Academy proper and began to fly low and slow along the adjacent mountainside. Jaina started to suggest that the Rift Valley would be a more likely hiding place, then remembered how long Jag had been hunting Alima and remained quiet. Half-crippled as the Twi'lek was, she was unlikely to hide her vessel any place that involved scaling 2,000 meters of valley wall.
This may be our last pass,
Jag said over the comm.
Academy Flight Control is starting to ask questions.
The flyover is making them nervous, Zek guessed. Tell them we're doing a security sweep.
I did, and Flight Control Command asked what was wrong with their security.
Jaina chuckled. Tell her we're bird watching. Jag was silent a moment, then reported.
Command says good luck. We'll see some magnificent go-cobs in the treetops.
Jaina and Zek chuckled simultaneously.
What's so funny?
You'll see,
Jaina said. Go-cobs were hairless rodents that spend most of their time rummaging for food around the academy kitchens. Friendly, but reviled for their habit of spraying foul mist when startled.
But if you do come across anything big and bright in the treetops, don't go down to take a look.
Not a go-cob?
Not a go-cob, Zek confirmed. There are some pretty big tree frogs on Ossus. They've been known to bring down T-65 trainers.
Their tongues are that strong?
That's sticky, Jaina corrected. If you get a big bunch of them dangling from your hull, you lose a lot of lift.
The Dactyl continued along the mountainside for another half a kilometer before Jaina noticed a faint depression in the forest canopy, about a kilometer upslope. There was no dark side energy in the force to suggest they had found Alima's strange ship, but the indentation was about the correct size and shape.
Mark,
she said.
Marked,
Jag said.
Did you sense something?
Sort of. Jaina explained what she had seen, then said, it's probably nothing.
But we should check it out, Zek said, finishing her thought. If we don't find something else first.
They completed the sweep without finding any other hints of Alima or her strange ship, then returned to the depression Jaina had noticed. The trees this low on the mountainside were primarily majestic kingwoods, with tall, straight trunks and spreading crowns of giant heart-shaped leaves. Almost all the boughs within the circle appeared more barren than those outside it, and there were several gaps where huge limbs had snapped off and fallen away. Through the gaps, Jaina could catch glimpses of yellow-white splinters and sharp crooks where branches had been only partially broken, then pushed back into place. These branches tended to sag a little, creating the small, bowl-shaped depression that had first drawn her attention.
Something definitely came down here, Jaina observed.
And not very fast, Zek agreed. This was a descent, not an impact.
So we found it?
Maybe,
Zek said. Jaina grabbed her electro-binoculars and, using the light-gathering function, peered down into the forest. For the most part, she saw only foliage and branches, but when she did glimpse the ground, all she found was undergrowth and dead leaves. At the same time, she was reaching out through the force, searching for even the tiniest hint of dark side energy. There was none. In fact, the entire area was remarkably still, almost devoid of any sort of force presence at all. She lowered her electro-binoculars, then turned to find Zek's dark eyes staring across the fuselage at her, looking as surprised as worried.
Do you feel that? He asked. I mean, did you not feel that?
Jaina nodded.
It's hiding from us.
So it's down there?
Jag sounded confused.
You're sure?
Something's down there, Jaina said. And it doesn't want to be found. It's hiding its presence in the force.
The ship is hiding its presence?
Jag asked.
Can ships do that?
This one can,
Jaina answered. Zek unbuckled his crash webbing. Hold us steady. I'll drop through the belly hatch and disable the ship. Instead of doing as Zek suggested, Jag swung away from the hiding place and resumed their search pattern.
Jag, maybe you didn't hear me. Zek asked.
I said I'd disable Alima's ship.
I heard you,
Jag said.
But I want to leave it alone. There's too much about this vessel we don't know. And if it can warn Alima that it's been found, she'll disappear before we have a chance to catch her.
Good, Jaina said. The sooner we chase her off, the better. Whatever she's doing here, I don't want her doing it around these young ones.
What makes you think you'll chase her off?
Jag countered.
This is Alima Rar. If she gave up that easily, she would never have survived Tanupe.
He's got a point, Zek said. We'd probably just set her off. We could get a lot of kids killed for no reason.
Jaina sighed, knowing they were right. They had picked up Alima's trail this last time only after hearing about the turmoil she had created at Roku Depot, a supply base on the fringes of the Hapen Consortium.
Jag seemed to interpret Jaina's hesitation as disagreement.
We don't get another chance like this. If we let Alima get away, who will she target next? Your father? Your mother?
My brother, Jaina suggested hopefully. When Jag and Zek responded with only nervous silence, she rolled her eyes and said, Never mind, we couldn't get that lucky.
Then we're decided,
Jag said. It wasn't quite an order, though as formal leader of their team he could have made it one. Just verification that they had reached a consensus.
We'll try to trap Alima and end it here.
As long as we don't put the younglings at risk, Jaina said. If there's a choice...
We have to let her go,
Jag agreed.
But she won't give us that choice. Not Alima Rar.
He swung around the mountain, placing its bulk between their dactyl and the academy.
Zek, take your stealth axe and sit on top of that ship.
Now Jag's tone made clear he was issuing an order.
If Jaina and I don't locate her, maybe we can flush her into an ambush.
Zek made no move to start aft. You sit on the ship. His voice was civil, but firm. I'll go with Jaina. I know the Academy a lot better than you do.
And I know Alima.
Jag's tone assumed a sharp edge.
Besides, I'm the commander of this mission, so you'll do as I...
I'll do what makes sense, Zek bristled. I'm a Jedi Knight, not some brain-bolted soldier who...
Boys!
Jaina was disgusted with both of them.
Whatever you're really arguing about, and I know it's not me, you wouldn't do that, not right now.
Zek's face flushed with shame, and Jag bled embarrassment into the Force.
Maybe Jaina should sit on the vessel,
Jag suggested.
She's the better pilot anyway. You and I will be just as effective on the ground.
No. You and Jaina wandering around the Academy might make more sense to Alima, Zek said, starting aft. You and I won't. If she sees the two of us here together, the first thing she'll do is start looking for Jaina.
You're right, of course,
Jag said.
Thank you.
Don't mention it.